this evening I'd like to pick up some of the themes that Martine introduced this morning, offer some reflections on them, on themes of perception and the Brahma-viharas. And again, hoping this will be practical and meaningful, so hoping to speak from that kind of place. And I'd like to begin with a poem, actually, written by Mary Oliver, that I hope can be a kind of a starting point for the talk. Mary Oliver, who died actually earlier this year in January, really wonderful poet, if you don't know her. And the poem is called Mockingbirds. It's from this collection called White Pine. This morning, two mockingbirds in the green field were spinning and tossing the white ribbons of their songs into the air. I had nothing better to do than listen. I mean this seriously. In Greece, a long time ago, an old couple opened their door to two strangers who were, it soon appeared, not men at all, but gods. It is my favorite story, how the old couple had almost nothing to give but their willingness to be attentive, and for this alone the gods loved them and blessed them. When the gods rose out of their mortal bodies like a million particles of water from a fountain, the light swept into all the corners of the cottage, and the old couple, shaken with understanding, bowed down. But still they asked for nothing beyond the difficult life which they had already. And the gods smiled as they vanished, clapping their great wings. Wherever it was I was supposed to be this morning, whatever it was I said I would be doing, I was standing at the edge of the field. I was hurrying through my own soul, opening its dark doors. I was leaning out. I was listening. So, really wanting to include this poem because it feels like it, to me, it feels like it captures something of what happens on retreat, or something of the work, of the meditation, of the practice, that happens here. See, this metaphor of the gods coming to visit, having sat in the groups, having, you know, getting some sense of what gods have visited each of us here through the past days. And also this line of the old couple who had almost nothing to give but just the willingness to be attentive. So again, this sort of beautiful image of what it means to practice this simple attention, a kind of a perception of that, we could say. And for this alone the gods blessed and loved them. And again, shaken with understanding, still they asked for nothing beyond the difficult life they had already. So something about this, meeting the difficult and bringing the awareness to it, bringing the attention to it. Yeah, so I wanted to open with that because it felt like it touches on some of the beauty of being on retreat and the practices that we're engaging in, just wanting to leave that as a kind of an opening. So another quote, this time from Tenesaro Bhikkhu, a monk I really appreciate and admire in his teaching and practice. This is from an essay called Deperception. Really, really worth looking into if you're interested. He writes, meditation teaches you the power of your perceptions. You come to see how the labels you apply to things, the images with which you visualize things, have a huge influence on what you see, how they can weigh you down with suffering and stress, and also how they can liberate you, actually. But, you know, this term perception that we've been talking about, that Martine was talking about also in the morning. It's kind of this faculty of mind that can recognize what's happening, that has the potential to name or to notice, to understand what things are. You know, we were talking about the clock and the bell and any kind of daily object or anything within our field of experience is a perception of this room or this retreat or a person, an individual, oneself or another. We're always sort of engaged in we're always meeting perceptions is one way of looking at experience. And just to point out, this is actually moving into a different way of looking or approaching at experience. So usually we think the way that we ordinarily conceive of ourselves is we're moving through the world as individuals and in a world of objects and things. So it's kind of like this materiality of reality, of the real world. I think this idea of perception, it holds in it this sense of the mind is somehow participating in these objects. Perception is something that's happening in a way inside the mind, that we're giving something to the experiences that we're meeting. That's the crucial difference between like things of the world and perceptions. Perceptions are always there's something, they're happening within experience. So that's kind of the crucial part of the definition, I think. Of that term. And one practical way of approaching this is, again, Tanisaro sort of opens it up in this essay. He goes on to talk about how what our perceptions of the breath can be. So, you know, we've been for the first few days in on the retreat, perhaps for many of you, throughout the retreat we've been engaging in working with the breath. That's one of the objects. And we can see that the breath is a kind of a perception, or we always have some kind of perception of the breath. So, you know, one way of perceiving the breath is it's air flowing through the nostrils into the body, and we can feel the body moving as we're sitting here. You know, you can get in touch with the physicality of the body and the sit bones on the seat and all of that. And that's kind of one perception, is this sense of the body breathing, the physicality of the body as a kind of a biological process, let's say. And then if we wanted another perception of the same, let's say the same experience, we can, as we're sitting with our eyes closed, we can get a sense of the breath as this moving field of sensations in the area of the body. So it's not, it loses, we step away from this perception of the physical and move more into the experiential. So it's kind of like we're sensing into the field of energy, into the field of sensation. It's just a clump of sensations coming together. So we could say two different perceptions of the same thing, leading to actually quite different experiences. So, you know, one experience is one of the physicality of the body, of, let's say, we can get in touch with the tissues and the muscles, and we can feel the knottedness of that, or the uprightness of the body, and there's a kind of a solidity there, and it leads to that style of experience. We experience it in a different way when that's the perception of the breath. And then the other one can be more just this shifting, changing experience of sensations and energy, and it's a lot more flowing and liquid. We can approach, with a little bit of skill, we can approach the experience of breath as something much more fluid, something much more liquid. And that lends to another experience. It affects the experience. So, as Tanisaro in that earlier quote says, the labels that we apply to experience can influence what we see, so that there's this connection between concept and our experience. They're in relationship. Usually we might think that the experience is fully separate, that there is this kind of hard reality underneath the concept. But as we begin to probe and explore, we notice, oh, there's this connection actually with perception, how we perceive affects experience. And, you know, we can have like a variety of other perceptions. We're always perceiving of things in some particular way. So we can approach the breath. We can see the breath as something, this is familiar. Like, I know this, I've seen this, I've sat a bunch of retreats and it's kind of boring. And that can be a perception. And that affects how we approach experience, how it shows up to us. If there is this perception of, it's not very interesting, it's wrapped up in our conceiving of the breath, and that's how the breath then shows up for us, through the familiarity. And you know, it's worth noticing certain styles of perception, certain styles of perceiving can shut something down for us, just in the ordinary way of approaching breathing. So if it's kind of like, I know this is a bit boring, something shuts down, it sort of dulls the experience, the perception doesn't open up for us. And then what can be a creative practice question is, can I perceive in a way that opens something up? What's a creative way of perceiving the breath? What's creative, or what's exciting for me? What's interesting for me? You know, something that I think, again, Martin introduced earlier, this sense of the uniqueness of the single breath, of this something that my life depends on, that everyone's life depends on this single breath. Again, a slightly different way of conceiving of the breath, a different style of perceiving of it. It changes the quality of it. A few people have commented throughout the retreat, oh, it actually moves you. There's a sense of urgency that can open up through that, a sense of interest. It lights up in a different way. And you know, this is just like working with the breath, just a few options. So it feels like it's kind of unlimited, I think, the ways that we can perceive things and notice how does my perceiving, what does it do to the object? What does it do to? And for me, this is like just working with the breath. It can be quite an exciting way of working. So it's not so much, I have to focus on this boring breath, or let me try and be with this with this in breath one more time. It's kind of like, oh, what can I bring to the seeing of it? What can I bring to the conceiving of it and to the perceiving of it on another conceptual level that can make it more alive? How does that impact So the other thread of this talk that I wanted to weave in is this theme of the Brahma Viharas. Again, these qualities that we talked about a little bit this morning, and I think practiced with in the afternoon well, with compassion, I believe. So these four qualities of heart, of kindness and compassion and joy and equanimity, that form a kind of a central collection of teachings of the heart qualities in this Buddhist tradition, qualities that. Are to be cultivated, that lead to deepening and to freedom and to deeper well-being. Again, there's formal practices that one can engage in that we've explored a little bit through the joy and the compassion practices, or one can just approach them as attitudes that you can bring either to practice or to, you know, to daily life, to interactions that we can try and hold or try and connect with. But it feels like, again, there's quite a lot of scope for creativity that we can play with them. And you know, this, I just want to dwell a little bit on this, on the name actually. Brahma Vihara is often translated as the sublime abidings or the divine abidings. Actually, the literal translation is Brahma meaning God, and Vihara meaning the dwelling place or the living place. So I don't know how that sounds to you. I think there's something quite striking there in terms of what it feels to be saying, that this is, you know, somehow within these practices, this is where the gods live, actually. And again, I'm sort of aware that this isn't gonna, that it's quite an unusual language, perhaps, for for our culture, which can be quite secular, and so it might not be everyone's cup of tea. So if it's not, you know, don't be. They're still worthwhile engaging. You don't have to like take on a devotional practice. But I just wanted to open up. It feels central to me that that's actually part of the name, or it feels like there's something there. And you know, we've seen hopefully with what I mentioned about this exploration of perception, again coming back to this, the labels that we apply influence what we see. So again, how we conceive of a practice, what conceptuality we bring to it, can actually affect the experience. So I think that's there with this sense of like what happens if we approach them through this lens. It feels to me that there's a kind of a, in the name, there's a suggestion that there's something in these practices that's a little bit beyond the ordinary, or a little bit beyond the human. That there's something more there. And for me, there's something quite beautiful in that name. So just wanting to honor that there's something quite, can be something quite profound in these heart qualities. That there's kind of a possibility of transformation somehow in the ways that we inhabit our mind, or the ways that we inhabit the our experience, I'd like to say, how we live or how we see. And just I was thinking back to a time on retreat some years ago, where I was spending more time with these practices of the Brahma Viharas, exploring them on a longer stretch of retreat, and at that time I was practicing, you know, bringing in a sense of bowing and chanting and doing like various practices as a way of exploring or supporting this exploration, and also connecting a little bit with images of bodhisattvas, which are these images within the Buddhist tradition. So sort of feeling like I was being quite creative for my practice at that time within my and I remember this particular sitting. I think I was struggling with something, or the practice just wasn't quite flowing as it sometimes quite often can happen, that one is sort of a little bit stuck with something. And then at that time, somehow quite spontaneously, there was this image of a figure that came to my mind that I was aware of in the middle of struggling, or this feeling a bit shut down, and sort of getting a sense of this perception of a figure that I sort of associated with Kuan Yin, one of the figures that's kind of an embodiment within the Buddhist iconography of compassion. And I realize this might be a kind of an unusual experience to be sharing. I hope that's okay. I wondered whether it would be all right to share it, but here we are. there's no going back now. So. And the way that the figure or the experience sort of unfolded, I had a sense of them sort of washing my eyes. This was sort of happening spontaneously. Like often she's depicted with a kind of a vial, with kind of a bottle, just gently washing my eyes with some kind of nectar. And I remember getting this sense of my gaze being somehow purified through that for that moment, or my eyes being washed through that, and seeing, kind of becoming aware of this habitual some hardness or some tightness or the suffering related with my practice actually at that point, kind of becoming highlighted for me, and kind of seeing, oh, this is actually unnecessary, this hardness, that there was this sort of seeing of myself, of my own practice in a different light through this experience, something sort of softening or melting through that. And that sort of leading to, or that being quite a shift in perception of how I was perceiving myself in that moment. And so, you know, I was saying it can sound like an unusual experience. Partly I wanted to share it because just wanting to say that there's actually quite a variety of experiences that can arise through meditation practice, that there's quite a lot of variety that I hear through the groups or speaking individually with people. And sometimes what we sort of present, as, you know, through the formal meditation practices, that can be in some ways, you know, we offer certain practices, and there's quite a lot that can fall outside of those practices, or that can arise outside of the typical sorts of experiences that we talk about. So just wanting to, in a way, normalize that there is this real wealth of different practices, or experiences rather, that can open up, and that there can be a lot of beauty there as well. That you know, particular experiences don't have to fit in any box of a tradition. That there is this sense of like there's a real there can be a real value and a real beauty to all kinds of meditative experiences. And also wanting to say that what's from this perspective, from the perspective of exploring, let's say, perception and the Brahma Viharas, is what's important is not so much the details of the practice, so that something appears or something changes, or that whether it's sort of dramatic or visual or physically sort of dramatic. That's not actually so important to me. That what I'd like to highlight more, or what feels more important, is what can we learn from the experience? What's the possible insight in relationship to perception, or how can it move us, or what's the sort of transformative potential within any experience? So you know, with an experience like this, what stood out to me was how much in that there was a shift in what my state of being was, this sort of slightly contracted, not flowing, a little bit stuck, or a little bit kind of shut down somehow, moving from that to this the gaze changing to having this more compassionate perception, the eyes sort of being washed and seeing myself with through other eyes, that something opens up through that. And that to me is like there's a potential for insight, that there's something. How I see myself, what the color of the consciousness is actually fabricates my sense of self, or that affects, that colors how I experience myself. So how any of the Brahma Viharas, how compassion can color the way we see the world, how it can color the way we see ourselves. And I think that this for me is one of the sort of what feels like more, what should I say, transformational, or kind of potentially like that the heart sort of opens up a little bit with this sense of possibility through this kind of reflection, that there's this sense of a potential for transformation in this that I sort of sense, or that feels more palpable to me. You know, I was thinking about this, and I found it a bit of a struggle to put words to this, but it's something about, you know, in the simplicity of it, that these practices open up a way of somehow touching in on the natural goodness of one's heart. Well, that for me is like, it feels like that's more important than any whatever any technique or any experience, that they sort of allow this connection with this, with touching in on some goodness within ourselves. And for me it's transformational, because I know for myself, and often the way that I feel also, you know, listening, meeting other people and hearing the groups and so on, often I feel that the ways in which we perceive ourselves can be somehow limited or limiting, that there's habitual ways of perceiving, our self-perception can be a little bit shut down, can be limited. So the way that I'm usually habitually conditioned to see myself is more in terms of what am I lacking, or that there can be a little, some tendency of evaluation or inner critic or some judgment of like, this is how I am. Our perception is more connected to our limitation than somehow our goodness or the goodness of one's own heart. And there's something quite transformational in being able to touch in, or having this sense of rest in, or touch some thread of goodness within oneself. I'm not quite sure why it feels like a struggle to talk about this in particular, but it does. But I hope you're getting the sense, because to me it feels like this is really at the heart of the practice, and it feels like it's sort of a little bit beyond technique, or it's kind of like it doesn't quite, because it's so simple, it doesn't lend very well to explaining. But there's kind of a mystery to it that you know, that it's not obvious to us, that our own goodness isn't obvious to us in some way. And it can be quite obvious in terms of other people, or when I sit in the groups and listen to people, and it feels like, oh, there's so much sort of this open-heartedness or good-heartedness. And it's obvious, sometimes it's more obvious when I look at other people, and then I have to do more work to see it in myself, or to touch it in myself. But there's some real healing there, actually, to be able to touch that, or be moved by that, and remember, oh, there is this, you know, there is this dimension, there is this part in the heart, and what I felt that happens with that is that it feels like it relativizes a lot of other things, so a lot of the other imperfections and lacks that I have of my personality, they begin to feel a little bit more secondary. It doesn't feel so important when there is this sense of actually there is this thread of kindness that's quite central, or that I can prioritize, or that's something that I really value. Then all of the other things that I may, all of my other lacks, all of my other imperfections, they sort of fall away. It's like, well, they're still there. It's like, it's, I'm not, you know, they haven't changed in any way, but there's something about, they don't matter so much. There's quite a deep transformation, or I sense quite a deep possibility of transformation through that, through touching in on that. And also, you know, I'm talking a lot about transformation on the level of the self, or this sense of like, oh, how do I see myself, but also on how we can perceive others. So it's also, I feel like, equally accessible, that it's something about you know, what can we tune into when we're listening to others, or when we're in the presence of others. And again, perhaps not such an obvious quality that's not so highlighted in our culture, this sense of the goodness of one's heart. It's like we tend to live in a culture of other sorts of values, other things are sort of raised up on a pedestal, and people are evaluated on other scales of other successes and you know, criteria. And there's something quite healing, I think, also on the level of perception of being with other people and tuning into that, and just appreciating, you know, having that sense of appreciation that this is there for another, that there's a sense of healing that can come through that perception as well. That's really all I had for this evening. Perhaps we can end with a little bit of silence sitting together.